Friday I did the Honolulu territory, and it was great. It was fucking great. And then I took a red eye to Tampa, worked a signing in Tampa on Saturday, then I worked another signing in Palmetto Sunday. And a friend of mine was at the show. He drove me back to my daughter before long ago. I've been there. Tomorrow I'm flying to Jacksonville for Friday to Saturday, and I go home Sunday.
Nice. Very cool.
I really think this territory thing is going to be really good.
Seems a lot more positive than the other one.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very good, too. There's stories that are incredible.
So which ones have you done so far?
The Florida one and the Honolulu one. And I think I'm going to do the Knoxville one because Ron Fuller owned Knoxville, right? First, John Chan owned Knoxville. Then he sold it to Ron. And then Ron sold it to Jim Barnett, who didn't miss a beat. They didn't even, shut down for a week. And Mark was going to open that Jim as a territory. And that's when that Plan B came in. And Barnett sold it to Crockett, who sold it to Bajak Mulligan and Ric Flair. So I think they're going to do that one because it's very interesting. A lot of people are involved in it, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Pretty good, though. That would be very, very interesting, especially with that Plan B stuff. That'd be very interesting to talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Ron's only really talked about it a little bit.
What?
Ron's only talked about it a little bit. He hasn't really delved into it.
I don't think Ron knows the true thing of it. The true thing was they were trying to extort Barnett. Because remember they said besides fake matches, the homosexual?
Mm-hmm.
That was Barnett. You know, Barnett, you know, I told you this before, he didn't own just territories. He owned major towns across the country, right? Chicago, Vegas, Denver, Colorado Springs, Louisville, Lexington, half of New Orleans, own part of Atlanta, part of Florida. He actually... He was part owner of Chicago with Fred Cola. And they were going to try to extort Jim for money because he got in trouble with the University of Kentucky football team. He was having them come over and party with Rock Hudson.
Oh, wow. Really? Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Football team, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you ready to talk a little Great American Bash 2000? I know you weren't there, but it's awesome to get the insight.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Hello and welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I am your host, JP John Pons. With me, of course, is the star of the show, the former ECW and WCW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing excellent, JP. How about yourself?
Doing very good. But I don't know if you've seen what's going on in wrestling. Cody Rhodes' arm does not look very good. Did you see that?
I saw the picture, yeah. Yeah. Got to give him kudos to go out performing with that kind of injury. How did he get the injury in the first place? Does anybody know?
He said weightlifting.
Wow. Wow.
Now, it was crazy because Meltzer, like, intimated, and you can't do this. You know, you definitely can't see. He was, like, intimating steroids, and then when somebody called an ad on it, he's like, oh, no, I'm not saying that. But he goes, oh, that injury is very common with guys that are on steroids. But why did he say that? You know what I mean? So It's very weird. Slippery slope.
Besides the slippery slope, that is, I mean, so he puts that out there not knowing Coach Don Sarris, right?
Of course, yep.
And it happens from wrestling injuries, but it also happens. It doesn't happen because you're taking steroids, unless Dave is an expert on taking steroids. That most people don't know. It's caused from when you're trying to lift a heavy weight, maybe a grip is off, or maybe the guy spots you wrong and grabs it. It happened to me one time. I was bench pressing and I couldn't get the next rep, and the guy grabbed from the left side, not in the middle. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So all the weight went on to my pec, and I didn't tear my pec, but it was black and blue like that. So unless Davey has become an expert on steroids, I'd say something like that.
You're right. Tough to say. Have you ever seen like a pack like that, though? I know you said you tore it, but have you ever seen like that discoloration? I mean, it looked really bad.
Do you remember when Steiner tore his Scott tore his bicep?
Yeah.
His arm was as black as coal. That's blood. Yeah.
Is that just bruising?
No, it's the tear itself where blood rushes in there. That's what I've always heard from doctors.
Is it as bad as it looks?
It looked very, very bad. It's as bad as it looks. If he didn't tear a tendon, it's bad, but it's not like a tendon tear. You know what I mean? Years ago, I tore my piriformis, which is the muscle that connects the Achilles tendon to your butt. And my leg, back of my leg, my hamstring was very black, and I couldn't walk for about 3 weeks without being on a crutch. So good for him that he fought through it. You know what I mean? And I think this kudos to Cody that he understands that he's got a spot lined up for him, and I think he's showing them that he'll go through anything not to miss an event. And kudos to him.
To me, what a great, heroic effort by him to do the match, because everyone said, oh, he's injured, he tore his back off the bone, he's not going to be able to wrestle. And he wrestled, and not only did he wrestle, him and Seth Rollins had a Hell in a Cell match. I mean, the match was great. That just added to the drama. Like, every time Seth Rollins would hit his arm or his chest, the crowd fainted and awed and popped.
Right, right. So, can't take anything away from Cody. I mean, his dad would have done the same thing, and his brother would have done the same thing.
Some of those things where it's like, wow, he probably won't wrestle, and then he wrestles, and then he wrestles a main event, and then he wrestles an awesome match, and then he comes out the next night, and he basically says, I want to keep wrestling, and then they do an injury angle where Seth Rollins takes him out. Is that the smart booking way to go about it, like have somebody take him out instead of just like, okay, I'm going to be gone for a while? Like, isn't it great to put somebody over on your way out and do an injury angle?
Yeah, especially since Seth has lost 3 times already, right? And I think Seth is a fabulous performer. So you give back to Seth, and it sets up a great angle. You know what I mean? And
yep.
You can have great finishes now. Anytime they want to give Seth the win back, all you need to do is have Cody beat the crap out of him, They go to the floor. Cody's meant to come back. He puts his back against the post. Cody goes for a dive, moves out of the way, boom. You know what I mean? And you could have the referee stop the match rather than calling Cody out.
I like it. Look at you booking on the fly. I like that. You must have done this before, as far as booking.
Yeah, I did it a couple of times, sure.
Like, AEW has CM Punk, right? Now he's injured, but didn't relinquish the title. They didn't do an injury angle. They made up this whole, convoluted story, but it looked like he actually broke his foot on the guardrail jumping out into the stands, and then exacerbated even worse. It looked like Billy Gunn's kids, his two sons, looked like they almost dead-weighted him in the match, and that looked like to pop something or snap something or break something. Did you happen to catch CM Punk's injury?
No, I didn't. Like I said, I've been on the road. I'm in Florida right now. My daughter's, and I just did a couple of signings, so I haven't really watched. So Punk hurt himself also?
Yep. He's going to be out for a while. I believe it's a broken foot.
And that's tough, because how you pivot, how you push off, a lot of your energy when you're wrestling comes from your foot.
You think they should have done an injury angle?
I would have thought so, but the other thing is, are you going to follow Cody? So it looks like you're being repetitious with them and trying to follow them. Maybe they did the right thing on this one. You know what I mean? Because hypothetically, people are going to see Cody's black and blue arm and chest, right? And then what it is Punk's ankle all black and blue also?
Not sure. They didn't have a look. Nobody, because he's wearing his boots still, what happened. So we never got a look at it.
Okay, so I would think that it wouldn't be as, hate to use the word impressive or an injury, but as impressive as Cody's. I think they did the right thing not following it because it looks like they're copying. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you want that comparison. And Tony and Punk are very smart guys, and they would have figured out what to do and whatever they decided to do, to me, would be the right thing because they're very on top of their business.
With Punk being out and Cody being out, obviously different companies, but is this a really bad thing or is this a good thing that other guys get to step up? You know what I mean, like injuries in wrestling?
It's not a bad thing. It's bad that these guys are hurt when they're starting to move the needle, right? But it gets people that a borderline fans to say, see, I told you, it may be prearranged, but guys really get hurt, and they get hurt bad. You see Cody's arm, you see Punk's ankle. They wouldn't have done it with two guys that are not valuable, you know what I mean? So it brings you a little notoriety to maybe people that don't follow wrestling.
Sometimes I feel like, man, it sucks that the guy's injured, but just like any other sport, next man up, right? I mean, you just got to have the next guy step up.
Right. And, it may be a big windfall for some young guy to step up and fill in the spot right now.
Now, let's go back in time and talk about the Subject of today's episode, WCW Great American Bash 2000, which was on June 11th, 2000, Baltimore, Maryland, at the Baltimore Arena. The attendance, 7,031. The tagline, a battle of heroic proportions. The pay-per-view buy rate, only 85K. So I know you're probably swimming, surfing, and fishing at this point, right?
Yeah.
Are you paying attention to the product? Like, do you talk to JJ or maybe somebody there to tell you, hey, not doing so good right now, Kevin?
I was talking to JJ a little, but I really wasn't paying attention to the product. You know, I had just get ready to build the gym from the ground up, buying equipment, going to the site every day, so I wasn't really into it. But that doesn't mean that I wasn't dropping in once in a while to see how they're doing.
With, 85K buy rate, obviously they're not doing well here. They're down from a few months earlier when they did over 100K. It just seems like, I don't know, whatever they're kind of throwing out there isn't working, and Goldberg is going to be returning from injury on this pay-per-view. But here's the weird thing. He's not booked in a match. So it's like, okay, he's returning from injury. They're kind of teasing him. Like, I don't know, if you were the booker, would you, okay, Goldberg's back, let's put him in a big match?
I think I'd try to get the most out of him as I could. If you have to realize you're in a down period, you're on a down slide, you want to do something to stop that, maybe give you momentum to go forward.
With Goldberg, too, it's like, okay, they're not really saying he's definitely at the show, but they teased him for it. So, I mean, it was weird. Like, throughout the night, they'll be teasing him. That was another thing. It was almost like he, and we'll get to it later, he does end up showing up, but it was like bait and switch. They mentioned that he's going to be on the show, but there's no match. Then they're like, no, he's not going to be here. Like, it was weird. Throughout the show, they didn't give you, a dead set thing. Is that, the worst thing you could do for booking? Because you're almost like setting up the fans or something.
Yeah, to me, it's bait and switch. You know what I mean? Where people think something's going to happen and nothing happens. I personally think it's, buy this car and you got a picture of a, Mercedes, and then you get them a Renault that's beat up. I don't think that's the smartest thing to do.
So utilizing Goldberg, who's probably your number one guy, would be or should be number one your number one focus, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So here, obviously, we're in the midst of the Russo-Bischoff regime, which doesn't seem to be paying off so well. I mean, it just doesn't. Were you getting any sort of maybe some of the boys calling you or something? They don't really mesh well together.
No, I wasn't. I think that during this period, not that I was reaching out anyway, but I think guys were trying to see where the cards would lay. Because in a power play like this, you don't want to get caught in the middle where somebody says, oh, Kevin told me that somebody called them and this is what they think. Yeah. And it isn't fair to Eric or Russo.
No. It just, to me, it just seems like that it's not working. Maybe they should have caught it sooner. Maybe they didn't want to catch it sooner. But it's just those two just didn't mesh. And you could tell even on the shows. Like, the shows are all over the place. You know what I mean? Just, I don't know. I feel like, they should have. It's one or the other. I feel like those two together is not a good idea.
Sometimes people with different philosophies are so separated, it doesn't work. I mean, we know, that Eric turned the wrestling business around with his idea of the NWO. Now we had Goldberg, we had Sting, we had Flair, we brought in Hogan. And these were all signs that Dick now. So disrespect these, but I'm sure there had to be a little tension with both of them working there because they're both alpha males.
No doubt about it, yeah. Like, who's in charge, who's not in charge, it just didn't seem like it was a good match. It didn't really, match well didn't really make sense. So as far as, like, your world champion, we always talk about it on the show, like, okay, Roman Reigns right now, 600-plus days of champion. Now, you got to keep the belt on somebody strong. So WCW, when Russo and Bischoff start together up until this month here of June, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 title changes in less than 2 months. Actually, it's exactly 2 months. They have 10 title changes. What do you think about that?
I mean, my personal belief is that's horrible. I mean, so everybody's a world champion. There isn't anybody that's the flagship of the company when you have 10 guys that have been the world champion. I don't think it's a smart thing to do.
It just seems like all over the place. Like, Jarrett is 4-time champion within those 2 months. So he's, you know, he's losing it, winning it, losing it, winning. They'll vacate a title at one point because Flair beats Jarrett. Russo doesn't like that, so he strips Flair. Then Jarrett wins it back. He wins a no-holds-barred match. Then Nash would beat Jarrett. Then Flair gets handed the title by Nash. Then Jarrett beats Flair on Nitro in Salt Lake City. So, and that's all kind of leading up to this show where Jarrett's champion is going to fight Nash in the main event. It's just like when I said it, you think, like, wow, that's kind of, you know, way too much. Like, Jarrett wins, he loses, then Flair's getting stripped of the title, then Nash is handing him a title. It just seemed like a merry-go-round.
It's worse than that. Nobody should be a champion 4 times in 3 months or 4 months. That's, it just belittles the championship belt. It absolutely kills it. What did you say? Roman Reigns has a belt now for 680 days?
50 years. Yep.
Trying to get back to sensibility, it looks like. Good for them.
I like that. I just can't believe, like, it's like, okay, if they want Jarrett to be the guy, he's the chosen one, like, he should have had the belt for all those months leading into, you know, wherever they want to go next, whether it's Booker T or whoever. But then you got DDP winning the title, then Arquette wins the title, then Flair wins it twice, Nash wins it twice. I mean, it was just like a merry-go-round. And it almost was like, okay, we're just trying to get ratings because most of those title changes were on Nitro and Thunder. So it seemed like a desperate attempt for ratings, right?
Yeah, without question. That's what it was. It was. Back in the day, they called it hot shot. Let's throw something against the wall and let's hope it sticks.
Do you think, like, that's the worst way to kind of go about it? Because in the long run, you're going to hurt the product. In the short run, I know you're trying to get pop or rating or whatever, but isn't that going to hurt the product in the long run?
Yeah, I think it does. And I think you need to go back to what got you at the dance. Exciting young guys that can fly, that can be luchadors. And Eddie Guerrero, and Lou Malenko, and very good bunch of tag teams, and then charismatic guys on the top. It takes a while to do that. But throwing it, you know, shit against the wall, over stick. I've never seen it work.
So as far as the show is concerned, the pay-per-view, Mark Madden, Scott Hudson, and Tony Schiavone are on the call. I actually just talked to Scotty Hudson, interviewed him. He's doing great. He's got his government job. He seems to be doing pretty good.
He's a great guy, and I thought he was very talented.
Do you like Mark Madden? I know we talked about him before, but did you like him? Did you get along with Mark?
I like Mark. I think he's a controversial guy, and controversy, what Eric's tagline was, controversy draws cash or something like that, right?
Yep, controversy creates cash.
So I like Mac very much because he was also a legitimate sports writer.
Yeah, true, and radio host, yeah, for sure, big time. And you're like mine. Like, have you ever come across like a star like Goldberg, but you didn't have a book for the show? Like, has that ever happened to you? Where you're like, yeah, if I could book like a big name for a show.
Not that I recall. And why would you have them on the show and not use them? And having them on the show and not use them instead makes you look lame, in my opinion.
So Tony Schiavone, like I mentioned, Scott Hudson and Madden are on the call. They're mentioning to us that Goldberg is supposedly in the arena, but they're not sure. So it's weird. Like, they kind of keep teasing it, like I mentioned, which I didn't kind of care for too much. But the first match is Lieutenant Loco, a.k.a. Corporal Cajun, a.k.a. Lash LaRue, with the Misfits in action, ends up defeating Disco with the Filthy Animal. And this was a Cruiserweight Championship match. Lash LaRue gets the victory in about 5 minutes. Okay, match here. Nothing too crazy or nothing to write home about. But what do you think about Lash?
I thought he was a very young, talented guy. I thought he was going to have a long, successful career. Very nice guy, too.
Inferno in with the Filthy Animals, like Conan and Ray and Hoovy and Tigress. Did you think he fit, or do you think there was like almost like a jokey thing of putting him in the Filthy Animals?
I thought Disco was a very talented guy, and I thought he was misplaced. Again, that's just my opinion. I mean, he could have been groomed to draw a lot of money. Because he was a smart guy, too. And he was smart enough to know that the Disco thing wouldn't last forever. And he could switch into something else. But it was like you said, they almost used him as a for comedy. For comic relief, and I wasn't crazy about that.
Also, Hoogantude is kind of being a bit of a comic relief. He's the juice, making fun of the Rock. He's doing all the eyebrow stuff. He's talking like the Rock. Do you like that, where you're imitating a bigger star?
No. I think he takes away from the biggest star. And Ruby was such a great talent. I think it took away from him. He could have been on. He didn't need that to draw money. Ruby and Ray's matches. Let's go back. How many great matches did they have? How many great matches did he have with Malenko? How many great matches did he have with Kidman? He didn't need, or they didn't need, to make him comical.
Also during this match, they do a comedy spot where this old guy comes down in a military uniform and Major Guns, who obviously is this beautiful blonde with a big set of you-know-what, comes and gives the guy mouth-to-mouth, and all of a sudden he's revived, and he didn't have a heart attack. Do you like, just cringe at stuff like that? I mean, it's an attempt at comedy, but it just seems so out of place and silly for WCW.
I cringe at it now. A lot of people are like comedy. I cringe at it. I like serious movies. If I want to go see a comedy, I go and I watch a George Carlin special. If I'm going to see something, I'm going to watch the best of it. To me, Carlin's one of the greatest, along with Robin Williams and Richard Pryor. I don't want to see what's the new kid on that. A show of his friend that used to be the fighter in comedy, Bizarro.
Oh, I don't know why. I can't think of it.
Brandon Sharp.
Oh, Brandon Sharp. Yep.
Yeah, it's horrible,
Yeah.
So if I want to see some comedy, I want to see the best. I don't want, it just waters down the product. But you have to have a direction of what you want your company to be. It can't be all things for all people.
So even more comedy is they kind of give Mean Gene this gimmick where he's like a shit stirrer and he curses. And like when he's interviewing the guys, he doesn't take no bullshit, which is always kind of his thing. But now he's kind of over the top doing it. So it basically like enhances his character almost into more of like a comedy role. Do you like that for Mean Gene? Do you really think that's necessary?
I thought Mean Gene doing it subtly got over much more because Mean Gene was that kind of guy. He was very humorous, but he was did it in a subtle way. And he could have maybe ratcheted up a notch. But Gene was so talented, I don't think that means him. You know, and if it was real, if you had a crazy heel, wouldn't that crazy heel eventually grab you?
Funny, these guys, WWE Deep Cuts online, they always post up, and I found like an old Mean Gene thing. It was him interviewing Jimmy Hart backstage, and he's, you know, his normal Mean Gene self, but he's sneaking in the very subtle one-liners, like making fun of like stuff that Jimmy Hart did in the past and who he sung with, and hey, how come Rick Springfield doesn't talk to you anymore? Like, you know, stuff like that, but it was very subtle, like very Mean Gene.
Yeah, and that's what Gene was very good at. Now, why would you make him that out deal with the Army?
Yeah, this was weird. Like, he's cursing and stuff. It's just, I don't know, it just didn't fit him.
I agree with you.
So the next matchup, Chronic, Brian Adams and Brian Clark defeat the Mamelukes, Big Vito and Johnny the Bull, to determine the number one contenders for the WCW Tag Team titles. The match goes 9 minutes. Okay match. I like Chronic, Brian Adams and Brian Clark. But I know you don't like the name Mamelukes for Vito and Johnny the Bull.
You could do that today, could you?
No, probably not.
Probably not?
Definitely not. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So why do something that's offensive? Is it going to get heat with a certain demographics? Maybe they won't turn back in. Or they'll flip the channel when you have the Mamelukes on.
That is true. So then we have an ambulance match. Mike Awesome versus DDP, Diamond Dallas Page. Mike Awesome gets the victory here with some help from Chris Kanyon, who turned on DDP and turned heel. Match goes about 10 minutes. Not bad. It was a pretty good match. Obviously, the winner was Mike Awesome putting DDP in the ambulance. Did you ever have big plans for Mike Awesome? I mean, he's getting a big win here over DDP. I mean, that's big time. But
there when he came in.
Were you a fan of him? Like, should he have gotten more?
Well, yes, a fan of myself in Japan were quite a numerous tours, but I was never there when he came in.
Right, yeah, right. You're home swimming and hunting and fishing and stuff, yeah. But do you think with him, like, the potential was there? Because it seems like, okay, this is 6'5", 6'6", he could fly, you know. Not really talk, he talked a little bit, but he, you know, he seemed like he had all the tools.
Absolutely, but not as the 70s guy. He was a badass, 6'5", Jack the Max guy that could work and was vicious. I don't know why, unless there was another agenda, which I've mentioned. Maybe they were going for the rope opera program. That was their pilot.
Yeah. Speaking of that, then G.I. Bro, a.k.a. Booker T, but doing the G.I. Bro gimmick, he comes down to the ring almost like on a zip line. Despite the Owen Hart, remember we talked about this, the Owen Hart tragedy, you know, happening the year before, but it just seemed like, I don't know, you figure that any wrestling would just not do the theatrics of the zip line and stuff like that after the Owen Hart incident.
I can't believe they did it.
What do you think about Booker T being G.I. Bro? his old gimmick.
Yeah, I think the main thing was very disrespectful to do it because of what happened. No, I just think we don't even have to get into the match. It was just disrespectful itself.
Yep. So G.I. Bro, a.k.a. Booker T., defeats Sean Stasiak in a boot camp match. The match is okay. Sean Stasiak, of course, is one half the tag team champions. Yeah, okay match. Match goes a little bit long, 14 minutes. It's like, I know he broke into the business as G.I. Bro. They weren't really doing much with Booker T. But what did you kind of, I know Chuck Palumbo comes down, tries to keep, but what do you think about just that? Like, does Booker T really need to go backwards all the way to the beginning of his career and do a silly gimmick? I mean, he's Booker T, for Christ's sake.
No, I don't think so. That was one of the most athletic wrestlers of all times. Correct me if you think I'm wrong. One of the most athletic wrestlers of all times, and give him a G.I. Bro gimmick. Tell me, explain that one to me.
I really can't. I didn't like it at all. I didn't think I needed it. It's funny, a month later, he becomes the world champion. So I don't know if, like, that's the best way to build up the champion is give him a jokey gimmick.
It's not. Look at the guys that are champions. Goldberg, serious. Nash, serious. Fast forward today, Brock. And then you got Roman. I don't see them being G.I. Bros.
Definitely not. I mean, kudos for him to just to do it, to pull it off. But, man, that's just, to me, bad booking. I didn't like any part of it. I feel like he's Booker T. He was already established as Booker T, too. I mean, man, just the best of seven against Benoit, 10-time tag team champion in Harlem Heat. I mean, he's already so established as Booker T. He doesn't need to go backwards.
He's Booker T. Would you change Roman Reigns now to Brother Roman?
No.
Okay. You know, I'm going to say something I'm probably going to regret. Sometimes when you don't know, you just don't know.
Makes sense. I agree. So moving on to the next match, we had a tables match. So we just went from an ambulance match to a boot camp match, and now we have a tables match. So Shane Douglas defeats The Wall in about 8 minutes. He ends up putting The Wall through three tables all at once to get the victory here. Nothing crazy or nothing to write home about. But Shane, I guess it's good to get the win on the pay-per-view, but do you think enough's enough with the, not every match gets to be a gimmick match?
Let me ask you this. You were a big wrestler fan at the time.
Mm-hmm.
How far away from this was from the wrestling you enjoyed? And, you know, I've said this a few times. Don't you think this is a pilot for a television show? Nobody can go through tables. And then you've got the most athletic guy in your squad, and you make him a different name after he's had the 10 series of matches with best out of 10 with Benoit, and he's won the title 10 times tag team champion. Don't you think this is not what they're trying to produce? Don't you think this is maybe another storyline they're trying to produce?
Honestly, I feel like it definitely could be, because, and I'll throw this one at you, because there was, Russo did a couple interviews around this time. I know he kind of said he was joking or kind of took him out of context, but he mentioned having no ring needed and no wrestlers needed. Meaning that, like, he could have actors and no ring. He said it was kind of taken out of context. He didn't really mean that about the ring, and he was just saying about the wrestlers, they're interchangeable. But to me, I don't know, when you hear no rings, no wrestlers, I mean, and I even remember as a fan 20 years ago hearing that, it literally got me nervous because I'm like, wait a second, no ring.
If she says that he was out of context, okay. But in my head, maybe I'm too old school. That's blasphemy. How do you want to have wrestling matches with no ring?
Makes no sense.
Well, the person that said this became the world champion. They didn't get that much heat over it. If Dusty had done that, or Flair had done that, or, and he did do it, there would have been a massive amount of heat. There was still been talk about. They talk about I can't even remember his name, the movie actor that won the belt.
David Arquette.
He had enough respect to give Pillman's wife his payoff, right?
Yep.
Shouldn't we respect, unless you have no respect for our profession, shouldn't you want to respect our profession? And I do believe, like I've said on many occasions, comedy's been in our business since probably the 40s or late 30s. There's a place for it. But you don't say you don't need a ring of wrestlers. That means you want to put out a television show.
That floored me. I remember even years ago, no wrestlers. Like, what do you mean? You're going to get actors? Like, that doesn't fly with me either. You know, like, that's not a good idea.
No. No.
And the crazy thing is, Russo, he used to be a huge mark. He went to WrestleMania 4, or a big fan, I guess you could say. He went to WrestleMania 4. He went to WrestleMania 5. He loved Hogan. He said Hogan was kind of the reason why he was a big fan. He was a fan before that, but he maintained a fan because of Hogan. And then he doesn't really book Hogan that way. So it's really weird, and some of the stuff he's saying. So he kind of, I think, got out of sorts in WCW for sure as far as booking it.
I don't know him that well, to say what you just said. But I do know that if any booker had, with no, think about this, he had no wrestling experience, unless I don't know something, made himself a world champion. Who was in the match? Goldberg and who? Paige and him?
And Goldberg speared him out of the cage, so technically if you get...
I don't care.
Yep, I got you.
Well, they would have been tied and feathered back in the day.
Yep. And he does have wrestling training. He trained under Johnny Rods for a little bit, so... Can't say he doesn't have any, but obviously he's not a trained wrestler per se.
Before he won the title, did he ever have a match?
No. Not that I can remember. Unless it was one of those, maybe he had like a handicap match against Rick or something with David. Okay. But it was a bullshit match. It wasn't like a real match.
Okay, so your first match, you win the world title. That's like Pete Reckemeyer. He fought Floyd Patterson. The first professional fight he ever had, he won the Olympic gold medal, and he came out, fought Floyd Patterson for the title. But he had an amateur background and won the gold medal, I think it was in 56. But winning a world title with never having a match, and I don't care what kind of finish they had. What was he doing in that match?
Right. Shouldn't have been in it. Yep. So, moving on, though. The next match, Scott Steiner with Medeja and Shakira defeats Rick Steiner and Tank Abbott in a handicapped asylum match in about 4 minutes. This one looks really bad. Rick Steiner and Tank Abbott can't get along. They're in that asylum cage, which is half of a cage, they were trying to make Scott Steiner is like this animalistic gimmick where you put the cage down, he destroys everybody. I just didn't like it. He retains actually, he really didn't defend
We're not
it, but
watching the wrestling
he's the guy. U.S. champion.
We're not watching the wrestling card.
It's all gimmicks.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with wrestling.
Hey, maybe he was serious with the no wrestlers, no ring. You know, maybe, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get rid of Flair, bury him in the desert, you know, move on with the next guy. Yeah, why not?
I actually believe that it was a pilot for a show.
So here we go. The next match, Hollywood Hulk Hogan defeats Billy Kidman. He's in full Hollywood Hogan outfit for this one. He defeats him in about 11 minutes, 30 seconds. Okay, match. Horace Hogan is the referee in this one. Obviously, he tries to cheat for the new blood and help them win, but it doesn't matter because Hulk Hogan gets the win anyway, thank God. I know we've kind of talked about it like a bunch with Hogan and Billy Kidman, but if you just look at them side to side, it's like there's, and I know Horace Hogan is the referee, so he'll cheat, so it's almost like 2-on-1, but it's just Hogan's not losing to Billy Kidman. I mean, let's be serious.
Let's go to the poster.
Yeah.
And I think the world of Billy Kidman. He could have been one of the greatest cruiserweights of all times. And probably was. How much did first of all, I always look at things this way. How much is it going to help Billy? And how much is it going to help Hulk? It certainly didn't help Billy because no one believed he was going to beat him and killed Hogan. When I say that, and again, no disrespect for Billy. Is it Randy Savage against Hogan?
Not even close.
Is it Flair against Hogan?
No.
Nash?
Nope.
Goldberg?
No.
Booker T?
Nope, Sting, no. Yeah, it's none of those guys.
And you go down the line, and this was not Billy's fault. Billy was designed to be on the upper card as a great cruiserweight champion, and with great support and getting a great payday. He wasn't to wrestle Hulk Hogan. And that's just my opinion. Again, like I said, we all have our opinions, but sometimes the reasons, you know, you said I'm smart. It's not that I'm smart. I've seen it all. And I have a very good retentive memory. I know what doesn't work, usually. And I know it works usually, but you can't take Billy Kidman and put him against Hulk Hogan. I'm going to tell you how much over Billy Kidman was. Did you say 85,000 buys?
Yep.
They should have done 30. Kudos to Billy Kidman.
Yeah, you got to give it up to Hogan, to me, for doing that feud. I know he said he wouldn't sell the flea market. He was kind of bashing some of the guys in the back, but he was kind of defending himself because they were saying he was getting older. He's like, you know, every day we're all getting older in the back, brother. You know, he was, you know, defending his spot and kind of being, you know, just blatantly honest about everything. So I kind of give kudos to the Hulkster for even, like, working and doing this feud with Kidman because me as a fan, I wasn't buying it for a second that he should even be wrestling him. It just didn't fit.
So why did they do it? Was it, again, going back to what I've been saying from the first match, was this a pilot?
Bischoff always says that it was like Hogan extending like an olive branch, saying like, all right, you know, I'll be in front of you. All right, I'll do it. You know, I'll work with you. That's fine. But while Bob doing that, he just became number one contender for the title. So it's like he's doing that and being nice and working with Kidman, but he is getting what he wants at the end. He is the number one contender now.
Right.
So Hulk and Horace reunite after the match. Then they show Bischoff yelling at security in the back saying that they're not doing a good enough job securing the arena from Goldberg. So for some reason, Bischoff, storyline-wise, doesn't want the biggest star in the company in the building. Does it make sense?
No, and I'm going to stick up for Eric here. I don't think that Eric had the stroke at that time when they brought him back. It was make sure it doesn't go completely off the rails. Because Eric's a very smart guy. So I got to stand up for Eric this one. And this isn't knocking anybody. If you have that position, you're going to try to do what you feel is right. So maybe he thought that going a completely opposite direction was going to jumpstart the thing again. And I don't fault him for that, but it does say wrestling on a marquee.
I agree. The next matchup, Ric Flair defeats David Flair with Vince Russo in his corner via submission in about 10 minutes. Not really that bad of a match. Obviously, Rick is completely carrying David, but it's interesting to note in the crowd, Reed Flair and making her pay-per-view debut, really Reed made his debut here, but making her pay-per-view debut, Ashley Flair, a.k.a. Charlotte, is out there in the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew both of them, Reed. I've known all of Flair's kids, but Reed and Charlotte I knew really well. I used to think there was a, when they'd come down to see me, Rick and his wife and the kids, and I would take them out on my boat, and I'd take Reed, and I'd give him a mask and flippers, and I'd grab him by the hand, and I'd go take a breath. And I pull him down to this wreck of like a 20-foot boat. And there was a nurse shark that lived in there. Nurse sharks are the only sharks that don't have to keep moving. And he lived like underneath the console. So I brought him down there. And I grabbed the shark by the tail, which isn't smart because the nurse shark can't turn around. Only the one that can turn around touches tail. And he came, he wasn't going to bite, and Reed went up to the top, and he told his dad, and his dad laughed. They were wonderful kids, and I never thought in those days that Charlotte would be who she came out to be.
So Reed gets involved in the match, and Ashley, a.k.a. Charlotte, and they beat up Russo to help their dad win the match. Just funny, it's like, wow, that's technically Charlotte Flair's debut was Great American Bash 2000. Right. You know, and now she's one of the biggest stars in wrestling.
Yeah. That's great.
So here is probably the worst match of the night, which is crazy to think given the two names that are involved, but Vampiro defeats Sting in a Human Torch match. Match goes about 7 minutes and 30 seconds. The thing is here that Sting gets set on fire, but it ends up not really being Sting. It's really a stuntman. But they pretend Sting is sent, basically set on fire.
The more you talk, the more it sounds like this is a pilot, doesn't it? You got stand-ins. You got stuntmen. You got through three tables. You got children involved in the wrestling match. This is the furthest thing I've ever heard from wrestling.
Isn't it crazy? And it's not even, I mean, you're burning the guy on fire. No, WWE did it with Kane Undertaker, but Kane actually gets set on fire. They lit his arm on fire, and obviously, you know, he ran to the back, or they got the fire extinguisher, or whatever, but this was like, he falls off a high thing, and just so bad. It obviously wasn't Sting. It just looked like guy dressed up this thing. It was really bad. It was one of the worst like stuntman things I've seen.
Right.
And then he fell onto a mattress. It was really terrible.
So would this even come close to looking like the NWO coming in against the Horseman and the Dungeon, Goldberg going through people, Booker or Harlem Heat going through the great tag matches, Eddie versus Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko versus Rey Mysterio, Conan versus maybe Sting. Does this resemble anything like that?
No, definitely not.
So, let's get back to this. Was there an ultimate design to stop wrestling.
It's but very then, weird.
What better people could you pull it over when the company that owns it, discounting Eric Bischoff, the North Tower, doesn't know anything about wrestling?
And DDP gets taken out of an ambulance. I know he comes back. He's like, so he's out. They take out Sting. He's out for, you know, for a little bit of time here because he gets burnt alive. Seems like, you know, I don't know, they're kind of doing some silly things with some of these bigger name guys.
Yeah.
Scott Hudson has a great quote after the Sting Vampiro match. This is not wrestling anymore, he said. What do you think about that?
I think he's right. I think he saw what every, like, people on the inside knew. There was something else going on.
You think that's a, like a work? This isn't wrestling, or you think he's shooting a little bit there?
Oh, he's shooting. He's shooting. I remember Arn Anderson called me one time and said, this isn't even a very bad independent show.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Double A with the brutal honesty.
Yeah.
One more time, we go to the back, and the beautiful Pamela Polchuk is with Eric Bischoff. Bischoff basically saying that there is no surprise tonight. Goldberg is not coming out. Just kind of like poo-pooing the Goldberg thing, which kind of makes you got to wonder, what is going on here with Goldberg? We're about to find out here. As the main event of the evening hits, Jeff Jarrett defeats Kevin Nash to retain the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Match goes 17 minutes. Okay match, I guess. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't really that good either. The guest referee, the special guest enforcer, was Ernest the Cat Miller as well. So a lot of other stuff going on, a lot of chicanery going on, but there's all this interference and other stuff going on during the match. So then Goldberg shows up. He finally hits the ring. We were waiting for him all night. He was able to get there. And then, boom, typical Russo fashion, as you could say. He swerved everybody. He hits Kevin Nash with the spear. He helps Jeff Jarrett get the victory. And now, for whatever reason, Goldberg has joined the New Blood, and he's celebrating with Jarrett, Bischoff, and Russo as Jeff Jarrett retains the title. And really, post-match, is Goldberg posing with Bischoff and Russo to end the show. So they just turned Goldberg heel on his big return.
Do you turn your biggest babyface heel with no build-up?
Hell no.
Hey, so again, I'm repeating myself to nausea. Is this a pilot for a different show?
Now, turning Goldberg heel, even then, I was like, wow, that's a big mistake. That doesn't make sense. First of all, why would he turn heel? Like, why would he join those guys? What does he care about Jeff Jarrett retaining the title for? You could say he didn't really like Nash, but did he really need to turn heel and help Jarrett win to do it? There was just so many things I didn't really care for. But do you like Goldberg just in general as a heel? Just doesn't seem to fit him.
No. I told you a story before. I'm in Washington, D.C. the day of a pay-per-view in the Washington Post. An editorial by one of the head rabbis in this country. It was a half-page editorial in the Post, one of the top newspapers in our country. The rabbi talked about how important Bill Goldberg was to the Jewish community. Not since Sandy Koufax. Think of who we talked about. The youngest guy ever put in the Hall of Fame, correct? 31.
Yep.
Didn't pitch on the holiest day of the Jewish year. He's putting him over that he said he is the David against Goliath that people should go to see Goldberg, and you turn him heel for no reason? I'm sure that I know he didn't, but follows the rabbi with a retraction.
Right. It just seemed like, I don't know, it seemed like out of place, odd. It like literally was kind of like typical Russo fashion. For the swerve, because people didn't see it coming, for shock value, they just did it without any real like end game to it and without it really serving a purpose.
Exactly. There was no purpose served.
Like when you turned Hogan heel. This should have had, like, whenever Goldberg turned heel, it should have had, like, that big of an impact. But, like, that sort of vibe to her, like, it actually felt real important. This felt like, oh, they're just trying to, you know, do shock value for no reason.
Right. Right. Well, what do you give the show?
I don't know, I guess I'd probably have to give it a thumbs down. No real match like stood out to me like that it was that great. I just find like the last month, the Slamboree, they at least had good matches, despite it being like not well booked. But this was like the matches weren't really that good, the booking wasn't really that good, and the Goldberg heel turn I just didn't like at all. As I'm giving you the results and everything, what did you think of the show?
I didn't see the show, but I'm gonna follow it. And Arn Anderson said, it's a two-thumb stinker.
Oh, nice. I like that, yeah. And it just seemed like Goldberg heel turn, the fans weren't digging it either. I mean, they weren't really ready to boo him.
No.
Big mistake.
Yeah.
So let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TwoManPowerTrip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. And, of course, you can follow Kevin on Instagram at TaskmasterTalks. And go to ProWrestlingTees.com and visit the Kevin Sullivan store. Kevin, what else you got going on?
Well, I'll be at RiverCon this weekend in Jacksonville. Please come say hello to me this weekend. I was at David Penza's podcast signings, and I had friends come up and tell me that JP, they loved our show. So
nice, I like that.
Yep.
There for a listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks.